Prabhupada ki. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki. Prem sikaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Vikrata Sri Vasadi Sri Gaura Bhaktarindu ki. Sri Bhaktarindu ki. Jai Ho Premanandaya. All glory to Sri Krishna. All glory to Sri Krishna. All glory to Sri Krishna. I think that's too slant. How about a harmonium or something? You have a top voice or something? Otherwise, well, just to put this down, it's easier. Or maybe that one's this thing here.
I don't know how you go.
All right, people, that's good. That's fine. That's great. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Chapter 8, Questions by King Parikshit. This morning is text number 24. Sarvam etatcha bhagavan pichato me anupurvashah tatvato arasi jahatum Panaya Mahamune Sarvamitascha Bhagavan
Sarvamitascha Bhagavan
Chito Medu Purvashah Atvato Arhasya Dharatum Panaya
Sarvam
Etatcha Since I am a soul surrendered unto you, please impart full knowledge in this connection. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The spiritual master is always prepared to impart knowledge to the disciple, and specifically when the disciple is very inquisitive. Inquisitiveness on the part of a disciple is greatly necessary for the progressive disciple. Maharaj Parikshit is a typical disciple because he is perfectly inquisitive. If one is not very inquisitive about self-realization, one need not approach a spiritual master simply to make a show of discipleship. Not only is Maharaj Parikshit inquisitive concerning all that he has inquired about, he is also anxious to know about what he has not been able to inquire. Factually, it is not possible for a man to inquire about everything from the spiritual master. But the bona fide spiritual master is able to enlighten the disciple in every way for the disciple's benefit. Shrima Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Mutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Sannidhi Namaste Namaste Sarasate Deve Gaura Bhani Pacharani Nivishesha Shuru Vari Krishna Sade Sitarani Om Gyan Shimadam Dasya Kananjana Chalakaya Chatsurum Viritum Jainam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vansha Kalpa Rupyas Chakrapa Sindhu Yamcha Tidhya Namaha So here, Maharaj Parikshit is just asked a whole series of questions. Lots and lots of questions, and they've almost poured out of him on all kind of whole range of things, from atoms to expansions of Vishnu Tattva, just so many questions. And then he says this verse. So he's asking, please, now I'm calls himself Pichatame. I'm very, very inquisitive of wanting to find these things out. So tell me all of these things, please. Sarvameka, all these inquiries, or the questions I've just asked, and this cha, meaning usually meaning and, but sometimes it's used in Sanskrit by itself just to say sort of and similar things. In other words, answer everything that I've asked and whatever else, Chummies, and whatever else. And so Prabhupada explains whatever else that I haven't asked. So that's why you get this cha, also that I have not been able to ask. That's a quite legitimate use of translation of this cha here. He wants to know. So he's so eager to know. I've asked you so many things. And maybe I've missed some important things. Answer those too. Then, since I'm a soul surrendered to you, please impart full knowledge in this direct connection. So Prabhupada's emphasis here in explaining this verse, commenting on this verse, is the inquisitiveness of the disciple as an important characteristic of his eagerness to hear or his eagerness to learn. They're very necessary qualification. Prabhupada talks about, he uses this term, discipleship. What does it mean to be a disciple? And this is a very important, actually an essential characteristic, that one is inquisitive about self-realization. One has to be eager to hear. Now, if we think for a minute, I was trying to think, what is it that makes us eager to hear something? Just in any circumstance, somebody's going to tell us something, we're eager to hear. Well, the first thing is we have to have some confidence in the speaker, that the speaker's not a liar, that what he will say, and also even more, that what he will say, even if he's a liar, if he's interesting, which is what he has to say is interesting. And interest comes before truth, in a way. Because if something is interesting, that's the main thing. And then truth just adds to interest. Then it becomes even more interesting if we're certain it's true. So also the truth character, the truth aspect is there. So it will be interesting for these things that it will be accurate, true, and also you can say insightful. You know, if there's some confusion about what's going on or something, this person will be able to somehow pick out the essential thing, the important thing, so that it's true and accurate and insightful. The other thing that will make it interesting is that it will be for our benefit. First of all, just that it may give us pleasure to hear it. Even if it's fiction, it gives pleasure to hear it. That we feel we're benefited by that. I get something by this. I'm at least entertained, if nothing else. But otherwise, we will also want more substantial benefit. We have to be convinced that what I'm going to hear will really help me. You can see that somebody who has become very rich in business, say in the stock market, he's invested in the stock market, or the futures market, or the bond market, or some way he's invested his money and made a fortune. And so he's certified, he knows what he's doing. Knows what he's talking about. He's an expert. And now he's going to give a seminar. And only 40 people can come, and each people has to pay $100,000 for 3 days. Those people who come are eager to hear. This person is going to tell the secret of his success, and they know if they can figure it out what he has to say, it's worth every cent. But they've paid, and they are paying really close attention. This happens all the time. When you have somebody really expert, knows what they're doing, and can really help you in whatever your field of endeavor is, you really are eager to hear, we really pay attention. So that's what really is supposed to, Maharaj Pariksit is one of the ideal hearers of Bhagavatam. Prabhupada calls him typical. He's a devotee, a disciple actually, because he's perfectly inquisitive. He's really, really eager to hear. Also another thing I think makes us eager to hear from somebody is that the person we are hearing from will be able to clear up any doubts or misgivings or confusions we have in the course of hearing. We bring this, well, you said this, and then you said this, and I don't see how these goes together. He can answer that question. And so we get more and more confidence. So these are all the characteristics that are there in the Sutta Goswami. You remember, we're already in 2nd Canto, Chapter 8. Maharaj Pariksit has heard a great deal already. And that has really increased his eagerness to hear. It's not that he's, okay, I'm finished. Now what he's heard has made him wants to hear more. Because he's understood that Sukadeva Goswami really knows what he's talking about. And he's received positive enlightenment from him. So his eagerness for him, his question was a vital question. He's on the brink of death. And he knew it. We're all on the brink of death, but most of us don't know it. But he knew it. And now he wanted to know, what am I supposed to do? And there were many sages there. And he never got quite that sense that people knew what they were talking about. But Shukadeva Goswami came. He knew he had connected with a real authority. In Bhagavatam we have several places that are very important where Narada, the Rishi, inquires from Vyasadeva, where the sages at Naimisharanya Forest inquire from Sukha Goswami, Richard Maharaj inquires from Shukadeva Goswami. We have all these instances of spiritual masters and disciples, and also in sequence, parampara. The word parampara means one after another. That this chain has been going in this way. So I want to go to. By the way, let me just before I do that. Since we're all coming here and we haven't been sitting here listening to this series of classes from the outside. Let me just refresh your memory. We should remember how the beginning of this chapter. Maharaj Pariksit inquired from Shukadeva Goswami, how did Narada Muni, whose hearers are as fortunate as those instructed by Lord Brahma, explain the transcendental qualities of the Lord, who is without material qualities, and before whom did he speak? So he starts this with a question about Narada Muni. The king said, I wish to know narrations concerning the Lord who possesses wonderful potencies are certainly auspicious for living beings and all planets. So see, right away he has this, that this will be valuable, it's auspicious for everybody. O great and fortunate Shukadeva Goswami, please continue narrating Srimad Bhagavatam so that I can place my mind upon the Supreme Soul Lord Krishna and being completely freed from material qualities. Thus relinquish this body. So that's another, this is his pressing need. That I'm going to leave my body and I want to be able to focus my mind on the Lord. Twice he's mentioned he's had no material qualities. In fact, in the first verse, these two words are used. He's described the qualities of the Lord, Guna, who is Aguna. So the Lord is Guna and Aguna at the same time. That's very mysterious. That sounds like a contradiction. But he has, means he has transcendental qualities, but no material qualities. So there's something mysterious going on here. How do we know this Lord? Persons who hear Srimad Bhagavatam regularly and are always taking the matter very seriously will have the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna manifest in their hearts within a short time. Now there is a definite advantage that the Lord will appear in our hearts in a short time by being who hear regularly and are always taking the matter very seriously. It's a special way of hearing. The sound incarnation of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Soul, Srimad Bhagavatam, that sound incarnation, enters into the heart of a self-realized devotee, sits on the lotus flower of his loving relationship, and thus cleanses the dust of material associations such as lust, anger, and hankering. Thus it acts like autumnal rain upon pools of muddy water. Whoa, that's powerful. It will do all that for me. Of course, if you're not interested in this, then you won't come to this class. Many people, this last thing they want to become free from is lust, anger, and angry. They want more of it. So they're not. But those who are really interested in this, here we find out that actually the sound incarnation of the Lord goes into the ears, into the heart, sits there, cleanses everything up, and one's relationship with Krishna is there. A pure devotee of the Lord whose heart has once been cleansed by the process of devotional service never relinquishes the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, for they fully satisfy him as a traveler satisfies his home after a troubled journey. So you can see, this is his understanding so far. What is Srimad Bhagavatam? You know, this model of Krishna understood all this. And then the question starts to pour out. He asks one question, and then he goes on. And then he, the spirit soul is different from the material body. Does a living entity acquire the body accidentally or some cause? Explain this to me. And then he asks, then he starts to start. All these questions come pouring out. And then when he's thought everything on his mind is out there, he says, and if there's anything I haven't asked, please explain that to me. So this is his eagerness. So this is a very important process for hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, the eagerness of the student to hear. In ordinary, even in ordinary situations of student-teacher's relationship, let's say you have a teacher who really knows something, is very expert on something, but most of the students are bored and indifferent, then the teacher just does a routine job. But if one student really becomes interested, like if somebody is really a teacher, they have a certain kind of deep satisfaction in seeing whatever they have to teach transmitted to somebody. It's just the nature of a teacher. Somebody who is a teacher, they just love it. They're eager that they really do want to impart knowledge to the students. Unfortunately, nowadays most of the students are just in there to get a degree and then don't really want to learn anything. They just want the credit and so on. But if somebody shows up who really wants to know something, then something special happens. And the teacher, when the teacher sees that somebody is eager to know, they start to disclose more. This is just the pedagogical impulse, just start to close more. Because I've had this experience in the university. So many teachers in universities, in graduate school, and there were a few good ones. I must say, only a few. I thought were really good teachers. And what I learned from those few good teachers, didn't really even matter what the subject matter so much was all the time, but if they were really good teachers, you really learned something very important. Things that like everyday in Krishna consciousness I use. It paid off, so it was there. Because a good teacher who has mastered something that's difficult, has mastered a difficult area of knowledge, that teacher has secrets, you might say. Things that not everybody will appreciate. The secrets of mastery. And if somehow or other you have a relationship with that teacher, and that teacher knows that you're eager, and some energy starts to flow between you, and then suddenly the teacher is showing into disclosing things that just seem to come out. And that you can, in 2 minutes, you can understand so many things that you would never understand. Like, for example, if you're trying to learn, master a musical instrument, and you have an expert teacher in a musical instrument, they'll just sit down, you know, and they'll play a few things like that, and then something really difficult looks really easy when they do it. And you're trying, they say, no, do it like this, and then suddenly, they show you, you see how it's done. This is what happens in the process of learning. In Krishna consciousness, when I became a devotee after so many years in mundane education institutes, I understood from Prabhupada the descriptions of relationship between the spiritual master and the student. I just realized this is the perfect condition for the transmission of knowledge. Even mundane knowledge, that relationship would be there. Perfect. This is what any student-teacher relationship should be like. And if it's like that, then actually everything takes place. But you can see how much in modern times these things are deteriorating. The teachers aren't masters of their subjects anymore. They're just hired paid government hacks. You get in there and you collect a pension, and students are dragged in there. Very few are eager to learn. It's terrible. It's just part of the decline of civilization. So we are very fortunate that actually, but like so many things with Prabhupada, you people may think that we're learning something that's about this religion or something like that, but actually it's just the generic student, the teacher-student relationship, wherever it works, wherever knowledge is actually transmitted, to the extent that it really happens, this will be the relationship, even for mundane knowledge. And you know that in India, when you're learning grammar or music or dance from somebody, something not necessarily transcendental, still that's the relationship. I mean, the word guru simply means teacher, shisha simply means student. That's all. That's all it is. It's nothing. So all the relationships like that for learning in Vedic culture, which is to say that real human culture, is like that, and it's lost. But in particular with Bhagavatam, here we have that the subject is spiritual. And I want to go back and I want to take us through this purport. Actually, two verses. This is at the very end of, this is a later instance of the transmission of spiritual knowledge. This is Sutta Goswami speaking. And from this, this is the last verse in the third chapter. And actually the purport continues into the first verse of the fourth chapter. And Sutta Goswami is in front of the sages at Namishwaranga Forest. And they've asked him to speak, and he tells them, he says to them, O learned Brahmanas, when Shukadeva Goswami recited Bhagavatam there in the presence of Maharaj Pariksit, I heard him with rapt attention. A Navishta means with a very fixed mind. I heard him with rapt attention, and thus, by his mercy, I learned the Bhagavatam from that great and powerful sage. Now, I shall try to make you hear the very same thing as I have learned it from him, and I have realized it, yatavitam yatamati, as I heard it, reflected and meditated on it, and as I have realized it. So Prabhupada has a very interesting purport here that tells us what's going on, especially with Bhagavatam. He begins by saying, one can certainly see directly the presence of Lord Sri Krishna in the pages of Bhagavatam if one has heard it from a self-realized great soul like Shukadeva Goswami. So notice, right away, Prabhupada repeats this about six times in the short purport, seeing Krishna directly in the pages of Bhagavatam. Seeing Krishna directly. Already Maharaj Pariksit, our chapter today, he mentioned that when you hear Bhagavatam, Krishna enters and sits in your heart and is manifest. So actually, Bhagavatam is special because if Bhagavatam actually takes place, then Krishna appears. This is a process that is not just about like the transmission of mundane knowledge, but is the transmission of spiritual potency. This is what parampara is, and not just that one message is passed on, just a propositional, verbal statements are passed on. Actually, when parampara is functioning, there's an unbroken flow of spiritual energy. The Bhagavatam contains the record of the spiritual experiences of important people. Models, actually, exemplary people, paradigmatic individuals who have seen Krishna. We have Lord Brahma sees Krishna, Vyasadeva sees. So many people have seen Krishna. That scripture is the record of their experiences, their direct experiences. This is called by Jiva Goswami Vaidusha Pratyaksha, the direct experience, not of anybody but of Vaidusha, those who are enlightened. That's what Shastra is. It's a record of their experience. When Shastra is transmitted, that experience is transmitted. Parampara is the means to take these experiences that happened in the past and make them continue to happen generation after generation, so that we should have the same experiences. Therefore, Prabhupada says, one can certainly see directly the presence of Lord Sri Krishna in the pages of Bhagavatam if one has heard it from a self-realized great soul like Shukadeva Goswami. So Shukadeva Goswami, or the book Bhagavatam, is a book we call a medium. The media, as we say in the plural, is a medium. But Prabhupada always uses the term transparent. In other words, the medium disappears and the experience becomes direct. It's the same principle with Bhagavatam as it is with the holy name. Krishna's name are the same. When the holy name is chanted purely, we see Krishna. If we're not seeing, then we're at least we should be in the process of becoming pure. By chanting. So Bhagavatam is also Krishna's name. It's like just one very big name. We have short names, and we have longer names. Yamunatiravanachari is the name of Krishna. There could be somebody called Yamunatiravanachari Das. You can just keep adding things. Because every name means some characteristic, quality, activity, so on of Krishna. So you can, Bhagavatam is just a big name. It's the same principle as japa. So one can see directly the presence of Lord Krishna in the pages of Bhagavatam, if one has heard it from a great self-realized soul like Shukadeva Goswami. One cannot, however, learn Bhagavatam from a bogus hired reciter whose aim of life is to earn some money out of such recitation and employ the earnings in sex indulgence. No one can learn Srimad Bhagavatam who is associated with persons engaged in sex life. That is the secret of learning Bhagavatam. Notice this word secret pops up a number of times in this purport. Nor can one learn Bhagavatam from one who interprets the text from his mundane and scholarship. So here Prabhupada mentions two instances where it may look like Bhagavatam is happening, but it doesn't happen. One of these people who put on Bhagavatam, it's a kind of artistic presentation of Bhagavatam. They're good talkers, they know how to move an audience, and they sit and they tell Bhagavatam stories. And they cry and the audience cries, I've seen this. But they're really not following the principle of Krishna consciousness. So it's a kind of entertainment. It's professional. For Prabhupada, the word professional is a bad word. In the West, we say if something's professional, it means it's well done, as opposed to amateur. But for Prabhupada, it means they do it just for the money. He even has the term of professional prostitute. So a professional reciter, somebody just does it for the money. He's a fruitive worker, not following his principles. So Bhagavatam does not take place. Or if you're in a university classroom and you're taking a Hinduism course and the teacher stands up and he speaks Bhagavatam and the students write down Bhagavatam, and maybe all of them know Sanskrit better than us, still, Bhagavatam does not take place. Nothing happens. So it may look like it's happening. Because, as Prabhupada is explaining, the speaker has to be qualified, and the hearer has to be qualified. Then Bhagavatam happens. Otherwise, it's a misfire. There's nothing there. So these are the conditions. One has to learn Bhagavatam from the representative of Shukadeva Goswami and no one else if one at all wants to see Lord Krishna in the pages again. That is the process and there is no alternative. So now, how does one become a representative of Shukadeva Goswami? That will also be answered in this purport. Suta Goswami is a bona fide representative of Shukadeva Goswami because he wants to present the message which he received from the great learned Brahma. That is to say, and nothing else, just as it is. Shukadeva Goswami presented Bhagavatam as he heard it from his great father, and so also Suta Goswami presented Bhagavatam as he had heard it from Shukadeva Goswami. So there's some faithfulness, some fidelity in this way. Prabhupada explained a little more in the next purport to the next verse. But then he says, simple hearing is not enough. One must realize the text with proper attention. Because Suta Goswami, as I have realized it. So we have this word realized that's in this verse in the Mrutana, as I have realized it. One must realize, simple hearing is not all. One must realize the text with proper attention. Here's where the inquisitiveness or the eagerness to hear becomes important. The word Nivishta means that Sutta Goswami drained the juice of Bhagavatam through his ears. Like you've been working very hard, you're sweaty, you're thirsty, somebody hands you some juice, you drink it like that. You drink like that. He's very eager. That is the real process of receiving Bhagavatam. So there is a process. It's not just haphazard. One should hear with rapt attention from the real person, and then he can at once realize what? The presence of Lord Krishna in every page. Again, Prabhupada coming back. The secret of knowing Bhagavatam is mentioned here. So again, there's a secret. Something that you may look like Bhagavatam is happening at some professional recitation. It may look like Bhagavatam is happening when scholars are discussing it, but the secret, they don't know the secret. It doesn't happen. It doesn't take place. Why not? Because there's a secret. One has to hear with rapt attention. And one who has heard with rapt attention, then that person can become the speaker in turn. The secret of knowing Bhagavatam is mentioned here. No one can give rapt attention who is not pure in mind. So now we know how can we, that degree of attention, how can we attain to that degree of attention? Most of us are. Most people go, you know, sleepwalk through their own lives. Nobody's hardly paying attention to anything. But Krishna consciousness is about the expansion of a consciousness, about the concentration and increase of attention. And so far as I know, attention has no upper limit. We mechanically fix our mind upon Krishna. On doing that, we get some purified, and then we begin to get a little, at least not direct connection with Krishna, at least with Krishna's outer effulgence. And then we become attracted, and that attraction increases. And then when you love Krishna, when you love anyone, that's when you really pay attention. The more love increases, the more attention increases. But if we just begin by mechanically forcing our attention, at least within attention of the seeds of love, actually it's a fact of the material world that if you pay attention to anything, it becomes interesting. This is a problem for intellectuals. You're sitting in a railroad station, nothing to do, and there's a book on Polish grammar. But you say, hey, look at this, isn't this interesting? You can get into anything. It's true, it's just because the world is made by Krishna and every little bit of it is interesting. That's what material scientists do, they just trip out on this interesting. So one has to give this rapt attention to Bhagavatam. No one can give rapt attention who is not pure in mind. People don't know this discipline, but the pure mind. When the mind is pure and peaceful and clean, then the attention can increase more and more. As otherwise there are fireworks going off and fogs moving in from passion and ignorance, and you're always distracted. No one can give rapt attention who's not pure in mind. No one can be pure in mind who's not pure in action. That's the next thing. Your behavior has to be pure. No one can be pure in action who's not pure in eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. In other words, even the most basic biological animal activities of life have to be done in a pure way. That's how pure we have to be. But somehow or other, if someone hears with rapt attention from the right person, at the very beginning, so you don't go through all that, but somehow or other it happens that you just hear with rapt attention. At the very beginning, one can assuredly see Lord Sri Krishna in person in the pages of Bhagavatam. And so he mentions this again. So you can see from this that what Prabhupada, he wants to distribute his books, he wants Bhagavatam to go. But then he has ISKCON. And what is ISKCON? It is simply an effort to create the conditions under which Bhagavatam can take place. That's what it is. So that there can be people. But Prabhupada is a bona fide reciter. He has to turn us into bona fide hearers. And we become bona fide hearers, we can become in turn bona fide reciters. And Bhagavatam happens. Krishna appears or starts to appear in the pages of Bhagavatam. So this is the importance of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. It just it has to be these conditions for Bhagavatam. Let me just go on a little bit. Prabhupada says in the next verse, which is the beginning verse of the fourth chapter, Shomika Rishi, having heard Sutta speak, stands up and congratulates him. He said he stood up to congratulate Sutta Goswami when he expressed his desire to present Srimad Bhagavatam exactly as he heard it from Shukadeva Goswami, and also realized it personally. Now Prabhupada discusses a little more what this personal realization means. Personal realization does not mean that one should, out of vanity, attempt to show one's own learning by trying to surpass the previous acharya. In the universities, everyone is trying to do this. You have to come up with something new all the time. He must have full confidence in the previous acharya. And at the same time, he must realize the subject matter so nicely that he can present the matter for the particular circumstances in a suitable manner. So it's these two things, complete fidelity to the text, but in this, you can present it according to the circumstances. It comes from you. It's your own vocabulary, your own understanding, your realization. The original purpose of the text must be maintained. No obscure meaning should be screwed out of it. Yet, it should be presented in an interesting manner for the understanding of the audience. This is called realization. So it's the same, but it may be quite different in another aspect. Yeah, one way you can understand what Prabhupada is talking about, maybe you have read some of the English writings of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He uses very big words, he uses very difficult sentences, and if you to really understand it, at least for me, I had to read the same sentence, six or seven times and look up some words in the dictionary. But I sat down with Bhaktisiddhanta because it's just so different from Prabhupada. And I worked my way through one of his lectures or writings in this difficult English. And I found out when I finished that I already knew everything he said. Because I heard it from Srila Prabhupada already. Prabhupada absorbed it and had his own vocabulary in a very simple way of presenting it, but it was all there. Because that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur vocabulary would not have worked. Where he went, he saw the audience and he could relate to the audience and present it that way. So this is realization. Realization is necessary if one wants to keep it alive. If it just becomes... That's why in the very beginning Prabhupada could have said to us, you are very young students, you don't know anything. So instead of your giving Bhagavatam class when I'm not around, you just play my tapes. He didn't do that. He made us, even when we said, I don't know anything, and Prabhupada said, just repeat what I have said, don't speculate, and talk about as your as what you realized. Why did he do that from the very beginning? So that people would learn it. Especially if you have to teach it, then you really pay attention. You have to repeat it to someone else. So this is the meaning. This is how parampara works. Prabhupada's created these conditions. If we want our tradition to continue as a living tradition, this has to take place. The Bhagavatam has to take place by engaging in the spiritual disciplines by which we get a pure mind, becoming absorbed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada called this the sampradaya of the book. This is our very important, essential activity. And in this way, when people come, there'll be a society of Bhagavatas. And people immediately. Somebody may get Srimad Bhagavatam on Sankirtan and they read it. But the next step has to be, I'm going to find these devotees. Or Krishna sends somebody and they come to a temple. And then what happens? They're from reading, they read Srimad Bhagavatam, they're going to expect something. They're going to expect a certain kind of people. So we have to develop this culture of Srimad Bhagavatam so it can take place. So we see this in today's verse. We have somebody like Maharaj Pritchett who's how he heard Bhagavatam and how he was inquisitive is there for our benefit. Okay. Thank you. Questions, comments?
Thank you very much for a very interesting lecture. You know that Brahmani hears the Bhagavatam directly from Lord Krishna. We hear that Lord Brahma hears the Bhagavatam directly from Lord Krishna. Mm-hmm. And still also we hear that his sons, the four Kumaras, hear it from Lord Sandarshan, that then gives them on. So what is the significance for this? Why didn't the four Kumaras hear it from Lord Brahma?
I don't know. These things are arranged by Krishna according to what he knows, and so this is what was the arrangement? Certainly, there was no loss. There were just for Krishna for his own reasons. When you hear from him, that can be directly can become a new disciplic succession. So there's one specific succession from the four Kumaras, one Sampradaya comes from them. Somebody heard directly from Krishna. Brahma is the other specific succession. The four Kumaras are not exactly in our specific succession. We go from Brahma, Narada, Vyas. That's another one. And then, of course, Lakshmi also heard from the Lord. That's another specific succession. Lord Shiva, another specific succession. But not everyone has to be. Lord Shiva is also a son from all sorts. he also heard from the promises, the arrangement of the Lord, whatever reaches. Yes?
You were talking about perfect transmission between teacher and student. If the student is perfectly inquisitive, but there's no seva, there's no service, how does that affect his ability to understand that the guru needs the service?
As soon as a student becomes inquisitive, actually the service will actually follow. It's very natural thing that after you receive knowledge from a teacher, you want to do something back. You want to do something. And so you want to please the teacher, so you help them. Can I do anything to help you? You erase the blackboard, sweep the floor in the school room, you empty the waste paper baskets or whatever, some circumstances, you just do something to please the teacher. And when the teacher becomes more pleased with the student, and the heart opens up and just thinks, knowledge is transmitted that's in a very spontaneous way that you won't see even in the curriculum book. So I think seva is very important. It's just an indication of eagerness that one will not This is a, one thing about Vedic culture. There's a presupposition, very basic presupposition of Vedic culture. And it's so basic, it's seldom stated. And that is, when you receive something of any benefit from anybody, you have to give back. It's just understood. But we don't understand it. You say, hey, it's true. Prabhupada said that a brahmana, he comes to the village, he sits down, and he teaches whatever, because brahma means you can learn anything and teach anything, and the children come, and he says, but he never charges any tuition. He never charges a fee. He says, this way, he said, India meant free education for everyone. But the parents say, oh, this nice Brahmin, he's teaching our son. Here's some cloth, here's some rice. He never had any need for anything. Can you imagine? Can you imagine, say, okay, you can come here. What happens to our gurukuls if we didn't charge tuition? Hey, it's free. Just take it and give anything back. This is a barbaric. Even in the Vedic culture, there's a certain karma too, because if you take something from somebody and don't give back, next life, you have to give back. So this reciprocation, so this is the basis of human society, that what you get. That's why you can have shudras who are taken care of. You know, that because they're serving you all their lives, they're dependent on you. You take care of them. Just don't say, okay, you know, it's just unthinkable. Nobody has to make a contract. You know, so we were so far away from actual human civilization. You know, these things that this basic thing, we just don't understand this. So everywhere there's a reciprocation. People serve, and if you receive anything from anybody, you have to do something back. So Vedic culture, as soon as a teacher is imparting knowledge, you know, I'm so obliged, you know, and actually real knowledge is so valuable. Even in a mundane sphere, if you learn something from an expert, you've got a mate for life. You know, you can never repay that debt. And so you serve. Yes.
That means that we have to teach people to reciprocate or that pay tuition. For example, many devotees do seminars. And
yeah, we charge for it because you have to, right? That is only practical. But see, these certain things are on the level of culture, and you to. You know, when we talk about strategic planning, there's a pyramid of organizational development, and the top is to change the culture of an organization. When the culture is changed, you don't have to say a word. Everybody just, they take it in with their breath. You know, the values and standards are just so powerful and conveyed in almost every act of every relationship of everybody. Then you have really powerful things. So I don't know when it will develop, but it needs to develop. It really does. This real culture.
Prabhupada can tell that none of us can. He came because he didn't charge.
He didn't charge, that's right. He did not charge. And we find today, if I give some seminar in America, you know, and it's free, nobody will come if I charge a lot of money, then they think it's worthwhile. Everybody understands that anything that's free is valueless. Nobody gives anything worthwhile away anymore without charging. It's very difficult. I think we have to stop now. It's 9 o'clock and we have a busy day ahead of us. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. Thank you.
my daughter does Indian violin. And the other day before I came here, it was a group of the day. All the students had to take a plate of fruit.
Yeah, it's still there.
He blessed them by throwing some rice on their head.
Yeah, it's like a little ritual.
Yeah. It's interesting.
I didn't even get this paper yet. Why did I get it?
They handed it up this morning.
Oh, I was
preparing for class this morning. I just didn't know.